Okay.
Have we already started?
Yeah, I officially started it. You excited to be here?
I am, actually.
I'm gonna give you that introduction first.
Let's do it.
Are you ready for it? I wrote it, I got off work an hour early because I was like, oh man, you didn't text me, so I was like, I didn't clean.
My bad.
And then you said,
I'm notoriously bad at texting people.
Yeah, why? I mean, I don't want to call you out or anything, like on a podcast or anything, but like, what's it take you like a week for?
I have no reason. I have no excuses.
What are you doing with your life?
I mean, I was sick, like,
the bronchitis.
Week. Strep throat.
Yes. My brother had bronchitis. I'm getting the things mixed up.
And then I, like, felt better, but then I went to work, and it was, like, 90 degrees, and...
Where do you work?
I work with you.
Is that the only job you have?
Well, I also freelance, like, art.
You do art?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. I love art. I want to make comic books. That's why I love art. So.
You want to make what?
Comic books.
Oh,
like
that's
I
sick.
Draw like that. People say it's good. I
cool.
always say like you're a liar because I don't, you know, classic stuff. You always, you know, it's called imposter syndrome. Whenever someone
yeah.
says you're doing well, you like assume, okay, no, but you probably since
Can
you're doing freelance
this?
Art. Yeah, why? You done?
I forgot to take my medicine.
Oh shit.
So welcome to Life of a Loser Presents. This is Andrew Edward. Just going to tell you quick things before the show starts. This is the first of a five-part series. If you heard the episode I did earlier this week, I told that part. I said me and this person did a five-hour podcast. So it's going to be... I'm not going to put the whole 5 hours out there. We're not doing Joe Rogan type stuff. We can't do Joe Rogan numbers. Nobody's going to listen to me talk over somebody for 5 hours. That sounds crazy. So here's the beginning. The first part of a five-part series. On our guest today, who will be talking about history. We were drinking, so it's called Drunken now, but also it's not called that because it's copyright issues, so we can't say that. We were just drinking, talking about things. So let's, without further ado, let's get into it. I'll let the other Andrew explain what's going to happen, and you'll be solid. All right, thank you, and here you go.
Then I should be like, oh yeah, I could probably do that.
Oh yeah, it's like if you don't know the technique, you're like, yeah. Maybe. Do I just stop their breathing? Do you have to hold their nose or something? I don't know. I prefer the mask. Those came along later.
Mm.
We just squeeze
yeah.
it. I don't know. I'm not a big chest compression guy either. We're talking about CPR now for some reason. Oh, I remember. Okay, so I was doing this certified class,
uh-huh.
and I breathed into the fake dummy,
mm-hmm.
and there's a bag behind the dummy, and it shot up. And the woman said, "You're probably breathing a little too hard." And I said, "That's an issue." To breathe too hard? I guess it can, like, blow their lungs or something.
Oh.
Pushing that much air into them. Luckily, I never had to...
You have to softly blow?
Yeah. Yeah. Nailed it. Welcome to the show again. Softly blow is the right way to say it. It's real creepy. Especially the way you, like, whispered it.
Softly blow.
Okay. ASMR time now?
Oh. Do you like ASMR?
I don't get it, person. Do you? You look like somebody that probably enjoys
yeah,
some soft noises in your ear.
Mm-hmm. I actually, every night, I listen to, like, white noise.
Okay.
I have one that I, like, specifically like. It's like a campfire with crickets and a stream.
Like this.
Yeah.
With a stream?
Yeah.
That doesn't make you want to go to the bathroom?
No.
That's dedication, man. When
but
it rains
it's like,
close
it's
to
mostly
my
like a fire.
Okay.
Noise.
If you want, I can convince whenever this kid gets back to make you a fire.
We'd really be, like, fulfilling my aesthetic that way.
What?
So we'd be fulfilling my aesthetic that way.
Yeah. I'll text. I can't. I turn it on, don't disturb. I'll see him walk in. I'm like, come here, make the fire.
Make the
it.
Fire.
Look at her. Yeah, you'd want to make a fire for her. Come on, dude. All right. You want me to do this intro now?
Yes, please.
Okay. I'm going to have to do some voices, so it's going to be kind of weird.
Oh, I'm excited.
Ahoy there! He said from the stern of his ship. Stern, right? That's the front? Doesn't matter. The stern of his ship. He saw her floating. How could this be? Is she a siren? A mermaid? A goddess? He brought her aboard his ship. Mercutio Fequa, the captain of this vessel, was instantly smitten with the stowaway. Where did she come from? How did she happen to be floating out into the sea, far from shore? He did all he could to make her make the passenger feel at home. He and his crew would give her trinkets and treasures from their plunder. Because you told me about pirates, so yeah.
Mm.
She would be the queen of their ship with Mercutio. her king. She would be the king of the queen.
Do you want to start over?
No, I'm doing great. I like to just mess up. Sometimes it's hard to read what I write because, like, in my head as I'm writing it, I'm skipping letters. You know what I mean? Because I think too fast for my hands.
Oh, okay.
So I don't proofread. That's a great start for things. Okay. She would be the queen of the pirates, a beauty that could only rival the sea. Eyes piercing just as deep as the sea was.
Me?
Yeah, we've talked about your eyes before.
Oh, that's true.
Not us, but have we?
I think you have.
Oh.
I think you complimented my eyes.
Well, they're huge, so good for you. Not in a bad way. Yeah, you're staring right through me. On his wedding day, Mercutio told her all of this, and her response was, "I am a spy, and you are all under arrest." Suddenly, the wedding was crashed by soldiers swarming the captain and his crew. Mercutio looked upon his once bride and said, "Who ye be?" And she replied, "I be Madison Frickin' Davis, and I be the best double agent in the world had ever seen." And that's you. Welcome to the show, Madison Davis.
You calling me a narc?
Do you believe that you aren't?
Come again?
Do you believe you're not a narc?
Why would I be?
I don't know. That just sounded like a cool story.
Oh, I liked it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you are offended by it, I could write another one in the next 20 minutes, but...
That's okay.
Yeah, so... I mean, telling isn't all bad, okay? I used to tell on folks all the time. Because, Yeah, like in college, my freshman year, the kids on the floor would always make noise. And I'm trying to go to sleep for class in the morning because I'm a good student, right?
And just rat on them?
And the guy, because I was also in hall council in college, so that's a thing. But they were like, "Andrew," they'd call me down there at 9 in the morning. And they're like, "Do you know who was making noise last night?" And I'd give names because I wasn't going to. Yeah. If you all are hearing the background noise, I don't actually know how that would sound. I've never done one on the porch before.
I don't know.
Or in nature, so a lot of this...
I feel like they're going to like it. I feel like it would be really good for storytelling.
Yeah.
The cars? Maybe not.
But especially when they play music, that's going to be out of time period.
Right.
But, oh well.
Oh well.
This is going to be fun. Today, Madison's going to teach us about history.
Yeah, I brought a little historical story.
What is it about?
Can
you give us a snippet, but not the whole thing, because you're going to have to tell it?
Yeah, so I know we talked about, my favorite time period is more of, the Age of Discovery.
Yes.
And, whenever we were first kind of sailing, or at least in written history that we were first sailing.
Are we talking, not Vikings, because those people have been doing it for years?
Right.
Yeah.
So more, Western.
Yes.
So, that's typically what I like and what I find most interesting, but... Whenever I was trying to think of, a good story to bring, I kind of merged a little bit of history with, true crime, which is typically the type of podcast that I listen to.
Okay.
So, we're going to find, a pretty well-known historical figure in the middle of a true crime story.
And this is, all fact. You're not doing, doing a partially fiction?
No.
In Inglourious Basterds, where, they kill Hitler?
No. Okay. Hitler will make an appearance.
What? What? Wait, how long was the Age of Discovery, or the...
No, so, actually, this takes place in, 1930s.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's a good time period.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the Great Depression, but...
Yeah, great time, dude.
Great. I mean, great.
I wish people could see our faces. Yes, you nailed it. I even said the word. So, yeah, this is going to happen, but before then... I want to tell my little history story.
Okay.
I didn't actually prepare it or anything. It's just a story about my favorite president of all time.
Who?
His name... Do you know a lot about presidents?
Not a whole lot.
I'll have to look him up real quick, because I just want to... but this guy, he didn't do a dang thing.
Nice.
Because he didn't have the chance to. Oh, look, they've already known I've looked him up 12 times in the past day. So this president's name was Winry. I'm already out. I'm sorry. He's the 9th president of the United States.
Okay.
His name is William Henry Harrison.
Right.
Have you heard of him?
I have.
Now, he's my favorite president because he was elected on March 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And he died on April 4th the same year. And he has like the whole story about the tipping canoe and Tyler too, you know, because John Tyler was his vice president. This is great storytelling, you could tell already, because I just like him very much. So like when he was elected, you know how they do the inauguration? No, my inauguration speech.
Mm-hmm.
He decided in the middle of what was it, March, in D.C., like East Coast, you know, he wasn't gonna wear a coat.
Oh, right.
So William Henry Harrison catches pneumonia and dies.
As you do.
And that's why he's my favorite president. Because he probably had a bunch of plans, and then he just got to achieve none of them. He was really just there to give John Tyler a spot in the White House.
Right.
And that's why a simple name like John Tyler is a president.
I think, I could be wrong, but I think they mentioned him in a show called Looking for Alaska. It was actually a book.
Okay.
And, like, the main character's whole spiel, or, like, his whole thing, is that he memorizes people's last words.
Okay.
I don't remember William's last words.
He was probably like, should have wore that coat. That's probably what he said. He was like, mistakes were made. If you... Now, I'm going to let you eventually do your thing, but if you... I think I talked about this with somebody. It was on the other... I did a podcast 2 weeks ago in a hotel room with a few people.
Okay.
And we said, if you had to have some dying last words, what would they be?
Oh, I'd want to be just, like, something cryptic.
Yes?
Like, okay. That there's... I can't remember the name of the guy, but there's this guy who, like, left almost like a will.
Uh-huh.
That has, like, sent people on scavenger hunts for generations. Because he said, like, he had buried treasure somewhere. I want to do something like that. Like,
oh, you're talking about the plot of the famous Japanese anime One Piece.
Actually, I'm talking about National Treasure.
Are you? Okay. I was like, because in... Well, I mean, I should know that because I've seen National Treasure multiple times. But there's this anime
National
called
Treasure
One Piece about pirates. You probably don't know like anime. It doesn't matter.
I like Spirited Away.
Spirited Away? Hiro Miyazaki?
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, man. Howl's Moving Castle? Didn't like it too much.
I don't remember it very much.
No, it's not great.
I like Kiki's Delivery Service, too.
Okay, I haven't seen it. But I'm willing to watch things. But yeah, One Piece, he was the guy, his name's Gold Roger, and he said, I buried my treasure somewhere, so all you have to do is find it, and then you can be the king of the pirates. Ooh. So his is very cryptic. He said it's somewhere.
That's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry, there's no crimes around here. We're next to the performing arts school. Yeah. If anything's going down, it's just a bunch of kids dancing Elton John on the front lawn, which is one of my highest viewed TikToks. Because I wanted
to show me.
I wanted to day drink on my porch, and then I walked out with my alcohol, and the kids were dancing to Zootopia, and I said, nope, and I just walked back in. That's the whole thing, but I can show it to you, but that's pretty much the whole thing. I was just like,
definitely show it to me later.
This isn't going
to
work. But what were we saying? You're cryptic. Go.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Something that just, like,
yeah,
people are looking at for centuries and, like, trying to decode.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Mine's not as cool. Wish I could say do something cryptic, like make people really think about things. Like, I think one of the things I said was like, oh no, it was like, I'm thinking about the question she asked, because that was one of them. The mm-hmm. other question is like, how would you describe this year in two words? And I said, well, we tried.
That's three words.
Wow, okay. My bad, dude. I just meant like how would you, in a phrase. One word or a phrase. That's how it was. And I said,
okay.
Well, we tried, so that's cryptic. Like, what did we try?
What did we try?
Yeah, what did we... Oh, I said, we were so close. That's what I said, too. I'm like, we were so close.
Are we just rehabbing the conversation you had on your last podcast?
I don't know. I haven't published it. So, if anything, this one could come out first, and that one just makes it seem like really weird that I'm talking about something that didn't happen yet.
Strange timeline.
Yeah. I'm going to do that that way.
Have you watched Community?
Yes, I have. I love Don Glover.
I love the episode where they, like, create all those different timelines.
Whenever they play the Roxanne and then the dice in the
yes.
air. Yeah. And then it was the darkest timeline, which became a mm-hmm. running joke throughout the whole thing. Because who lost their arm? Jeff lost his arm?
While
putting
remember.
Out the fire. And then, it's so good. And then, like, every time he'd stand up, get hit by, hit the his head?
Yeah.
Would hit the fan. I'm just remembering this show so well. But I was a big fan. Yeah.
It's a good show.
I like Donald Glover.
I like him too.
Childish Gambino?
Mm-hmm.
So good. You ever see Atlanta?
No, I have not.
Okay. That's fair. It's a good show. I'm going to check where we're at, see if you have enough time to tell your story. But also keep
Hopefully
going.
I have enough time.
No, you do. Some podcasts are 2 hours long if I really feel like stretching it.
How long are your podcasts normally?
They used to be 30 minutes, and then I would split them over a week period. But then my brother said, the content's so good in the first 30 minutes, I don't want to wait a week for it. So I just started doing hours.
Okay.
So I can give you the whole hour.
What else would we do with the time?
Talk. That's what you would do with life. We've been doing it this whole time.
True. I think I can probably, like...
Stretch?
I think I can stretch it, but I, like, also, you know, we can converse during it.
I agree, because I'm going to have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I'm a classic interrupter.
Okay,
because
perfect.
I think I have a undiagnosed problem that makes me not stay as listening as long as I should. Well, I can't listen. That's not true. People tell me I'm a good listener. And once again, imposter syndrome kicks in, and I say, you liar.
I mean, you have a podcast, so...
True. What's that mean? That I listen? Or that I just talk?
Could be either one.
I can't clap hard because I'm holding the mic, but that's what I'm doing for her, you guys. Alright. I'm gonna let you get into it. This is History with Madison Davis.
Okay. I'm gonna try not to, like, read it word for word. But...
Are you, like, one of those people that can read out loud?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was always like, you know when you do popcorn in class?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Were you the person, like, eager for it?
Hmm?
Were you, like, super eager for it?
Yeah.
You were like, ooh, call me.
Yeah, I was like, hell yeah.
I was the opposite.
Were you?
Yeah. Like, I would sit there and be like, please don't. Please don't. And then when you're young, like, if the cute girl's reading, you're like, if she calls on me, I'm going to be very confused. Like, maybe it's just because I'm the only person left? Or what if, you know? It's like, it's a double problem now. And then it turns out, much later in life, I wanted to be an actor. I said, I kind of suck at reading in front of people, you know, so I don't know how this is going to work. But memorizing is different. You can talk about anything that you're thinking up off the top of your head. But reading, like, if you're doing, like, a table read, that gives me, because I'm like, I start putting words in front of each
intro.
Other. What? What'd you say?
So I could tell by your intro.
Oh. Dissed. That's true, yeah. But if I memorized that, it'd be solid.
I believe it.
I don't think you do.
I do.
But I'm okay with it. Okay. So, popcorn. Okay. It's your turn. You want to wait for the car to pass? Okay. I'm going to keep all the dead air, too. Like I said, I don't like to edit.
That's lazy.
What?
That's kind of lazy.
All right, I'm going to send you the raw audio. I'm going to have you edit it.
I don't know how to edit.
It's not that hard. You just cut the parts you don't like.
Oh.
Like that.
I don't like that.
You don't like motorcycles or just that noise?
The noise.
That's fair. All right. It's going to get louder now. I mean, once all those people... It's going to be great. If we keep this going long enough, once all those people get out of the game, they're going to walk past and see you talking. Mm-hmm. And the pressure's really on.
Where do they park? They park over here?
It's literally every car on the street is not people that live here.
I see.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Once again, you're history experts. It's reading about 1930s. Travel, Madison, Davis. It's still going. Oh my gosh! It's like right whenever we wanted to start, dude. Right when we wanted to start, people decided, "I want to drive by." This podcast brought to you by Trops. Gallon drinks from Trops, only $35. Continue.
Oh, I should Venmo you.
You're good.
You sure?
I mean, you know, yeah, you're good.
Okay.
I was like, unless you want to take it home. Not the cooler, though. That's not mine. I actually just stole that. So.
Okay.
You ready now?
Start now.
Yeah.
Okay. On May 20th, 1927, Charles Lindbergh began his transatlantic flight from New York City to Paris.
I know him.
You do know him. So, in his plane, The Spirit of St. Louis.
I was going to say, was it The Spirit of St. Louis?
It was The Spirit of St. Louis.
I've never seen it, but I've heard about it.
I think I have seen it.
You been there?
There's, like, an aviation museum outside of Washington, D.C. I think it's there.
You a big traveler?
I have traveled.
Perfect answer. All right, continue.
Okay. In his plane, The Spirit of St. Louis, he flew 33 and a half hours and landed to crowds of thousands in France, welcoming him as the first pilot to make a solo, nonstop flight across the Atlantic. Big deal, right?
In your face, Amelia Earhart. She was after him, but I just wanted to make the statement, you know what I mean? It's good.
That's okay. A whole nother story we could do.
Are you saying there's going to be a part two?
Maybe there'll be a part two.
There should be. Okay. It's already going so great in part one.
I agree.
And then we can get other people to come watch you tell stories. And then they have microphones.
Have them sit in a circle.
Yeah. We should all prepare.
Have microphones. We can get the... And yeah. Oh my God.
I'm into this.
Yeah, me too.
And then if we get really good, we can just do it like Drunk History and have people act out your stories.
I love that idea.
You're like, he landed the plane. I have a friend that actually flies planes here, but I don't know if he'd want to do that.
Plane.
Yeah. If you're listening, Zach, he was on the podcast once. If you're listening, Zach, we need you to fly a plane. You can be Charles Hemingway. Who? Charles Lindbergh?
Yeah, that's the word.
Who's Hemingway? The writer?
The writer.
Yeah, okay. Nailed it. Continue.
Okay. Following the flight, Lindbergh embarked on a victory tour where he traveled nationwide abroad the spirit of St. Louis. It was near the end of his tour in 1927 when he met Anne Spencer Morrow.
Hold up. You're doing great. Uh-huh. This guy flew around the country, or flew around the world. And he flew around it again just as a victim.
Just to be like, just for fun? Look what I did.
He's like, I did it twice.
I can do it again.
Wow. All right, Charles. I see you. Continue.
So at the end of 1927, he met Anne Spencer Morrow, who became an aviator in her own right. And the two married in May of 1929.
Oh.
She's actually like super cute. I saw the pictures of her.
Look up one.
And good for you, Lindy.
Look up a picture of her.
What?
I want to see her.
Oh, right now?
Yeah. I have to finish this snap to let people know I'm doing a podcast.
Do I look cute?
Well, yes, of course. If you didn't, that'd be surprising. Because you rocking it all the time. Get it. So work that self-confidence. So we're looking up Anne Morrow?
Yes.
Or Anne Lindenberg?
I think she may have kept her last name.
Not even a hyphenate. I like her style. A nice truck passing by in the background.
He did not stop the stop sign.
Look, that's actually one of the things. There is no... Oh, yeah, she got a good profile. She kind of looks like a... What celebrity should she look like? You ever see Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah.
She kind of looks like the main character from that.
She does look like her.
From the side. Who also plays, what's her face in Scooby-Doo? You know?
Yeah, or Velma.
The one with the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's not Sarah Michelle Gellar.
You're right.
Yeah, so that's who that she reminded me of.
Yeah, for anybody listening, she looks like Velma from the Scooby-Doo movies.
Is Velma the glasses one?
Mm-hmm.
And Daphne? Both names are very, like, 1940, so I don't know who's who. Have you met a Velma or Daphne in real life?
No.
Okay, perfect. Continue with your story, my friends.
Okay, so the two married in May of 1929. And on June 22nd, 1930... Charles Lindbergh Jr. is born. I'm going to probably just refer to him as Charlie or the baby so things don't get too confusing.
So it's just, I mean, to be fair, it would be weird if you just casually mentioned they had a child without him being a huge part of the story later.
Yeah. So the story, if you were to look it up, typically just the Lindbergh baby.
Did you call it the Lindbergh baby?
The Lindbergh baby.
I like your version better where you call him by a name.
Yeah, I feel like it's better to give him a name than just call him the baby.
Charlie. Something tells me this kid's... Wait! No, continue. I feel like I've seen... Because I'm like... I like to, you know, true... Okay, I know what you're talking about. Continue.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Okay. So, in March of 1932, the Lindbergh family was at their new home in Hopewell, New Jersey. The family had not fully moved into the house yet as construction was still underway. And at this time, they were only staying on the weekends. So it was March 1st, 1932, and about 10 p.m. that Tuesday evening, Betty Gow, Charlie's nurse, notices the child is missing. Betty Gow.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just really... Now I'm wondering what the last name Gow derives from, but continue.
I don't know. Good question, though. Okay, the child's absence was reported to his parents, who were at home at the time. An immediate search of the premises found no trace of the boy, and the Hopewell police were notified.
Yeah, you saw. Okay. I just like keeping it on so I can see it. Yeah, you're fine. The police, Hopewell. You have a very... It's a nice... Your voice is solid.
Am I going to put people to sleep?
I have bad ears.
I feel like I could do those... what's it called? Is it like Calmly or something like that? Where it has like
it's
people
like an app that talks.
Yeah, I know Harry Styles did like one bedtime story thing.
What's up, Harry Styles? Not my favorite member of One Direction, but
who is your favorite?
Zayn.
Zayn.
Yeah.
The first one to leave.
Yeah, I used to. I mean, this is gonna be really weird, but I used to go to the barbershops.
Give me the Zayn.
And I would show them a picture of Zayn and be like, "I want my hair to look like that." And they said,
"A lot of volume."
Yeah, I cut my hair recently, yesterday actually, but it was like this tall yesterday. So.
Was it?
Yeah. It's life. All right, back to you. You're right, this conversation between is very riveting.
Getting very off track.
Yeah.
Okay, the only things found in the nursery were a chisel, a ladder leading up to the window.
What?
Well, it was on the outside, not actually in the nursery. But, and a ransom note for $50,000.
All right, now, inflation rate based, how much is that in 1930?
That would be $800,000 today.
Did you
looked it up.
Okay, I was like,
no,
I know
you're... did not do the mental math.
Oh, I was like, how are you ready for this question I just asked you?
I prepared.
Okay. Did you write that in your next thing, like, in parentheses, $800,000 today? Okay.
Literally, that's what it is.
Perfect.
Okay. There were muddy footprints found beneath the window next to the ladder.
Yes.
And the ladder outside the window appeared to be makeshift and had broken where the two sections joined together. So it was made so that it could, like, collapse down, so that it could be, like, transported easier.
Oh, okay. Like those ladders you see in infomercials today that can do those weird things.
Yeah, it's like one that, like, extended up.
Oh.
I think. That's how it kind of sounded. But
damn, this guy was on legit moves, man.
Yeah, they said it was, like, crudely made, but you could tell whoever made it knew what they were doing.
Okay.
And, like, I saw pictures, and I was like, that's not a bad ladder. But apparently, not the best, because it was broken.
Right.
So, after...
But it did the main part of its job.
It did... Well, sadly.
Yeah. Hey, good point. Okay, continue. Sorry.
Okay, so after the police are called, and they can't find the baby, there's a media frenzy. Mm-hmm. Because Charles Lindbergh and Anne Morrow are, like, huge celebrities of the day. Like, you know, international aviation icons, if you will.
I will.
You will. So.
Oh, wow. International love. They know what we're talking about. If you could hear that in the background, the song was International Love by Pitbull and Chris Brown.
Mr. Worldwide.
Yeah.
Which was
like Charles
Lindbergh.
We're killing this. Okay.
Okay. So though attempts were made, Lindbergh was unable to communicate with the abductor until a second note was received on March 6th, 1932.
What was the original time? That was the...
March 1st.
5 days later. Okay.
Mm-hmm. This time, the ransom demand was increased to $70,000.
What was it originally?
$50,000.
And then you said...
$70,000.
Oh, I thought you said $7,000. I said, that's...
Nope,
that's
a 7D.
Okay.
So, upwards of $1 million this time. That's like a lot of money.
I'm excited. You're a good storyteller, man. I'm just saying.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A third ransom note was received on March 8th, this time denying the Lindberghs any of their chosen intermediaries. But on the same day, a retired school principal named Dr. John Condon published an offer in a local newspaper to act as a go-between for the Lindberghs and the kidnapper.
This seems... Oh, he has a child out there. I popped my back trying to look back. That felt nice. They're nice people. They have a dog. My bad. I should have done this inside. That's on me. I just thought it'd be fun on the porch.
I think it's entertaining.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much for anybody that does end up listening, but...
Nah, if anyone's listened to me this far, if they've made it to season 2, part 2, they know the kind of weird stuff that happens here.
Perfect.
We did drunk Mad Libs once, you know?
That sounds like fun.
I mean, if you want. Once this is over.
I'm already feeling it.
I got the Mad Libs book.
Throw that cup in. My cheeks are hot.
Yeah. Blood pressure's boiling, dude. All right. Where are we at?
So...
Oh, the principal decides he wants to be a mediator. Like,
yeah,
ooh, that's not suspicious, buddy.
So let me just get in the middle of this.
Yeah.
It's very sus, in my opinion.
I just said it too, so yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, back then I was like, oh, this guy's so nice, huh? What a nice principal man.
Went out of his way.
Yeah. He's taking care of other people's kids. Now he's going to try and take care of our kid.
Wow.
Wow. All right.
Okay. So the following day, March 9th, Dr. Condon received an anonymous note which accepted him as the intermediary.
See, he thought I was going crazy earlier, man. He got an anonymous... No, I can't say the word. Anonymous note. Like,
the
they
anonymous
didn't...
note.
Oh, the guy, the kidnapper, or the female kidnapper, said, you good.
Yeah, they said, you good.
Yeah.
And then the Lindberghs also said, you good.
Mm.
And they gave him the $70,000, and Dr. Condon began making negotiations.
Oh.
On March 12th, Dr. Condon received a note that led him to the Woodlawn... Okay, so I didn't put all of this in my notes, but there's, like, a lot of notes that go back and forth. Like a lot.
Some of them were just like, how's it going today, doctor?
Yeah.
The kidnapper's like, hey, dude.
Yeah, so there's, like, a lot that goes in between. But
how's the school year going, doc?
It's very tedious, so I didn't put it in here. But
were they... How many, like, overall, you think?
I think they said, it, like, at the end, there was, like, 12 notes total.
Okay.
What?
That doesn't feel like too much.
It's a lot to be like, well, then he sent this, and then he sent that, back here. And...
He was doing the thing, okay, now I'm going really off track, but, like, in Harry Potter, where, like, Hermione has to relay to Harry. He's like, Havadi said that Seamus said.
I'm not an owl.
Yeah, hey, that's a good accent. Nailed
Thank
it.
You.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. I'm not an owl.
Yeah. But the doctor was. Continue.
But the doctor is. So, Dr. Condon met him at Woodlawn Cemetery, where he discussed payment with a man who identified himself as John.
John?
John.
Isn't that the principal's name?
Yep, they're both John.
Okay, I mean, I guess it's a very common name, but...
It is a pretty common name.
So wait, he've actually seen this guy. They met each other.
Yep, they met.
How do they know this?
I mean, it's recorded.
That's what I'm saying.
They also Someone said had, that so Dr. The, Condon was like, fought, like, had a bodyguard with him.
Okay.
He didn't like actually. The,
no
the
one
bodyguard,
tried to take him because they'll
like,
never find the baby.
Back.
Yeah. But he was chilling.
He was just like sitting back from far.
Got your back, guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Continue. Yeah, this area is pretty nice. One time, I was sitting out here. There's a man walking by, so she stopped and looked around. I was sitting out here, and this man said, you know where this is? I was actually out here with a bunch of people. We were doing a cookout. And then this guy started yelling at us, and I walked over and saw what he needed. Mm-hmm. And everyone was afraid. They're like, why did you go to him? I was like, oh, he just needed to find this street. And that's all that happened. I feel like I was the right appropriate person to approach him, you know?
Why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. I just felt like I was.
Okay.
Yeah. Continue.
Okay.
John and John are in
the cemetery.
Ashwood.
Woodlawn.
I knew one of the words right. Continue.
So Dr. Condon meets him at the Woodlawn Cemetery where they discuss payment. And the kidnapper agrees to furnish an item to confirm Charlie's identity.
Oh god, he's gonna cut his finger off, isn't he? That always happens to prove that somebody's... Okay, I'm ready.
No fingers are cut off.
Oh, thank god.
On March 16th, it's been over 2 weeks after the child first went missing, the Lindbergh family received Charlie's sleeping suit.
Sleeping suit?
I'm guessing that's just like a onesie.
Like a jumper.
Something like that.
Nah, probably not the word I'm thinking. What, the baby naked now?
I don't know.
But you're the historian. I'm getting you. I'm ready for more.
Then April 1st, 1 month after the kidnapping, Dr. Condon gets a note telling him to be ready with the money the following night.
Yeah.
So it's been a month since baby Charlie's been missing.
Fact.
So April 2nd, after following instructions on a note that day, Dr. Condon meets John again. I don't think in the cemetery this time.
Where do you think?
It said something about, like, there was a note outside of a greenhouse. Ooh. I don't know if that's where they ended up meeting or not.
Do you think in New Jersey, state that's states in, they have this whole, like, there's like a, I don't know the proper way to say it. It's not going to be like a museum. But it's like a tour where you can walk this places, you know what I mean? Like,
that'd be kind of macabre.
Now we're in the cemetery, you know? Macabre's a cool word. Can you explain? I've heard it, but I don't never use it in my terms.
Macabre is like kind of, I can't think of the best way to describe it. Okay. It's like in, okay, almost like in bad taste.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That would sort be bad. Hey, you know what? Good call. But there are people that do, like,
it's
terrible,
like,
things
in bad taste slash gruesome, in a way.
Okay. I love it. Continue.
Okay. So it's April 2nd, and Dr. Condon, John, meets John.
Yes.
And he demands that the ransom is dropped back to $50,000.
Out of nowhere, Miss Doctor's, yeah, like, yo, ain't happening.
Right.
Damn, that's ballsy. Especially if he's playing around with somebody else's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
It must have been, like, agreed to, though, I'm sure.
That he could just do whatever?
I think AWOL? It was, like, a whole big plan.
Oh, they worked on it? Like, all right, yeah, once you get
I'm guessing.
You say, nah, I'm kidding, 50,000.
I think it was just, like, here, take this, or, you know, like, it's your only option.
Take it or leave it?
I was gonna say that, but I was like, maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, alright. Ready for more.
Okay, so the kidnapper agrees.
What?
To the $50,000.
Dummy.
And
don't settle in life, you know what I mean? I'm telling this to everyone right now. Never settle. If you find something you want it, don't settle for less. Unless you kidnap a child, then just don't be an asshole.
Right.
So, continue.
And the kidnapper agrees and hands a final note that is said to have the location of Charlie Lindbergh.
Yes.
So the next day,
the Lindbergh baby, if you will.
The Lindbergh baby. The next day, following the information on the final note, a search for Charlie was made near Martha's Vineyard, looking for a boat named Nellie. That would not be found. And neither would the baby.
So this is a happy story. Okay.
Until May 12th, 1932, almost 2.5 months since he'd last been seen, the body of baby Charlie was found in a ditch on the side of the road.
Oh. You really came with the joy today.
Yeah, it's not a happy story.
It's not a happy ending at all.
No.
No. Okay, keep going. I'm sorry. I feel like I saw it coming, but I didn't want it to be true.
That's fair.
All right.
So, the investigation keeps going.
Yes.
But they don't have a whole lot to work on. They bring in a bunch of different experts, like the FBI is involved. They have, like, handwriting analysts.
Yeah, analysts. Yeah, people that look at handwriting.
Yeah.
If we want to dumb it down, yeah.
And then they brought in, like, wood. It was like a forestry expert.
Huh?
To, like, analyze the wood used in the ladder.
Okay.
It was like crazy.
They're going hard.
Like, oh, they went hard.
Yeah.
And, like,
they brought in a medium who just touched the clothing and was like, yes, I feel you, Charles. The baby, Charlie, was J.R.
Yes, Junior.
Yes.
Yeah, they brought in, like, all of these different experts. Like, no hold bars. Like, they just went for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't really get a whole lot, because it was just, like, there was not a whole lot of evidence to go on, you know?
Yeah. They had the jumper, though.
But that apparently had been laundered.
What?
Yeah.
They sold the jumper?
No, like, it had been cleaned.
Oh. That's what laundering is, huh? Mm-hmm. Making your money clean so the government can't track it. Good call. Like money laundering.
Speaking of money,
mm-hmm.
So they had like saved all the serial numbers of the $50,000?
Yes. I do that in the bank too.
Oh, do you?
Because I work in a bank and we have to write down the serial numbers on our bait money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was like the only thing that they were really banking on.
So to speak. Nice.
And finally, their opportunity arrived. Bills started coming into banks. And after each bill was recovered, a colored pen marking the location of the recovered bill was inserted in a large map of the metropolitan area.
What? Hold on. What were you... Say that whole thing again.
Yeah, I probably didn't word that the best. So, as bills started coming in to the banks, they would put a pen in a map to mark
the location. To show where the... it's kind of like they're trying to triangulate.
Yep.
Okay.
So they were like following where the money was coming in.
Yes. They always say that. Follow the money.
So that way they could track like the movements of the person who was spending the money.
Yeah.
Then, on September 18th, 1934, so 2.5 years after Charlie was kidnapped, an assistant manager at a bank company in New York City telephoned the New York City Police Bureau to advise that a $10 gold certificate had been discovered a few minutes previously by one of the tellers in the bank. It was
a gold
certificate. Yeah, I think that's what they called them back then. Because they could be, like, traded in for gold.
Oh, okay.
So it was... That's a cool
Oh, look at the vibe in there.
I can do that. You know they do drugs.
Either that or they're just, like, really casual about life. No, they're doing drugs.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So, they found out that the bill that came into the bank had been spent at a gas station in New York City.
The gold bill?
Yeah. It's just like it's...
Yeah.
Just like a $10 bill.
Okay. It's so weird.
They called them like gold bank notes.
Was that back when we...
Gold certificates.
I don't know if we still do. This is ignorant speaking, but like, is that back when we worked on the gold standard? Like, everything was worth our weight in gold?
I think this was after the gold standard.
Gold standard came was earlier, like in the 1800s?
It was, like, early 1900s,
okay.
I think.
Gotcha. We're doing well. Or I'm doing well. You're the expert here, so. Okay.
So. Was there a bug? Oh.
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, it come from a gas station in New York City. And the attendant at the gas station had actually taken the description of the man who spent the gold certificate. He thought he was sketchy. So he took down his license plate.
Yes.
I don't know why he didn't report it himself. Like, they had to go back and track it. But it seems very...
You know, he was probably like, it felt weird. You ever just see something that feels weird, so you just, like, take note of it? You know what I mean?
But I feel like I would tell someone.
Like a friend or something? Or like tell an authority?
But I feel like if it was that suspicious that you take down a license plate number...
Yeah.
You'd at least like pass along like, hey, this was kind of weird.
Oh yeah. Good call, good call.
But there's no like mention of why he thought the guy was suspicious.
He was probably like, hey man, we usually deal with shekels around here. This guy gave me $10 in gold, so I was like, what the fuh?
Possibly.
Yeah.
So...
like shekels were a thing.
The police trace the license plate back to a man named Bruno Richard Hauptmann.
Of course, Bruno Richard Hauptmann, yes. We didn't have to say his middle name. It could have just been Bruno Hauptmann, but they're like, you know what, add the Richard in there.
Well, I mean, that's how it was reported.
All right,
so,
dick.
Trying to be authentic.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so when the police go to search Bruno Richard Hauptmann's...
Yep.
They find over $13,000 in ransom certificates. The gold.
Hell yeah.
You can tell where I like stopped trying on my notes.
Okay, so now you're just writing points. You're like, the gold. Oh yes, the gold.
The gold. Yeah. I had a hard day. Okay.
I'm sorry.
They were found in a secret garage in Bruno Richard Hauptmann's house.
A secret garage?
Yes.
Bruno's rolling deep.
I did not look up what $13,000 was.
It's kinda okay.
But.
And we're just between. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Continue. No.
But it's a lot more than that.
It's more than I have currently, in before inflation. It's more than I have right now. So.
So.
Yes.
They're like, ladies and gentlemen, we got him. He was indicted.
Uh huh.
In charge of the kidnapping and murder, and I think a lot of other stuff like tampering or.
Yeah, extortion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Because, like, you're making. You're getting money from people in an unsavory way. Mm-hmm. You're extorting them.
Okay. So.
Child trial, endangerment.
Probably.
I mean, but also, yeah, that's really. You can smack anything on this guy. He killed a kid, so.
He.
Or. Oh, shit, you're about to fucking blow my mind? Sorry to curse, damn.
We're gonna keep getting into it. Okay. So, the trial for Bruno Richard Hauptmann. began on January 3rd, 1935 in New Jersey, and the trial lasted 5 weeks. The case was pretty much just based on circumstantial evidence. All they had to go on was the handwriting analysis, mm-hmm. which they said was a match. And they also said that wood from the ladder matched wood that was found as flooring in his attic.
Okay. So he was working on his attic at the same time he was building a ladder, using the same tree's wood.
That's what they say.
That's very circumstantial. Like, who's to say that whatever wood made this porch isn't like... Okay.
They also said that Dr. Condon's telephone number and address were found scrawled on a door frame inside a closet.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the closet was made of? The same wood as the ladder.
I don't think so, actually.
No, yeah, probably not, but... You know what? This guy, even if he was innocent, he's not getting away with anything, because when you said secret garage, that's weird.
That is weird.
What does it mean? Like, it's underneath the ground like he's Batman? Or is it hidden behind some trees that, guess what, made his attic floor? I don't know. But continue.
So, I guess...
I think we scored a home run.
Do you think we won? Oh, you can almost see the board from here.
You can. Whenever you, on Friday nights, if you don't work, well, if I don't work, essentially, I don't know where you live, but if on Friday nights, if you don't work in there, you just go across the street and then watch the fireworks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we usually put a blanket out there and drink. Oh, my gosh.
I think that's a train.
Oh, it's the train.
I mean, I assume so.
Yeah. Where do you guys park when you're over? It doesn't matter. Continue with the story.
We park close to the train.
Okay. I was like, because I ride my longboard to work. I don't care, I guess.
So, they also, in, like, I guess the handwriting analysis, they also did kind of, like, a dialect type of test, and they said that the...
Because Bruno's probably, like, real deep Italian.
German.
Oh, that makes more sense.
They said that they thought whoever had written the notes was of German descent, mm-hmm. and then Bruno Richard Hauptmann was German.
Now, I don't want to put to shame... investigations prior to 1980. Like, a lot of people were just trying to close cases in order to say that they did it.
Yeah.
Nobody likes a cold case.
I mean, especially with such, like, a high-profile case.
Yeah.
Like, they were looking for justice.
So, like, once again, Bruno may not be innocent, but he may not be guilty, you know? So,
yeah.
But we're going to continue.
It's not a lot of...
It's not cut and dry.
Evidence to go off of.
Yeah.
For
so
sure.
So I want you... How much... What's that? What?
Huh?
It's almost to the end?
Yeah, we're almost
oh,
to the
end.
Oh,
this is sad. I wanted to hear more. How the hell is Hitler part of this story?
We're almost there. We're
okay.
Okay. So on February 13th, 1935, the jury returned a verdict. Bruno Richard Hauptmann was found guilty of murder in the first degree,
mm-hmm.
and he was sentenced to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that you pause waiting for a reaction. I just don't give you anything. I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there was, like, appeals and this and that, and it took a little while. But in 1936, Bruno Richard Hauptmann was electrocuted to death.
Yeah.
Which sounds so brutal.
You ever see The Green Mile?
I have not.
Okay, there's a brutal electrocution in that film.
Oh god.
Because the guy doesn't, he purposely doesn't wet the sponge. Yeah, electrocution would suck. There's that, like, that story, that one, doesn't matter, I'm not going to finish that, but it was about this little kid, this kid in the, you know, like, the early, I think, 60s, 50s, and, like, you know how, like, how do I say that? You know, there was still segregation and stuff, so, like, mm-hmm. if a black person did anything crazy, all of a sudden, they were guilty of something.
Right.
It was, like, some 13-year-old yeah. kid, and he was electrocuted. Yeah, his last words were written down and everything. I forgot what his story was, but you've seen it? You've heard of it? But he was, like, only 13,
exactly
just
who
a child.
About, but I can't think of his
yeah.
name.
So, yeah, electrocution, no form of any type of murder is, like...
Yeah, I'm anti, like, death penalty.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother...
We can talk about that on the next one.
We can.
We get into your political views. It'll be fun. Actually, that, you know what? I've only talked about politics once on the podcast, but that'd be fun. Continue.
Okay.
But right now it's history.
It seems very cut and dry.
Yes.
Right?
No.
No.
What do you mean?
Like,
I guess so. There's a lot that looks suspicious.
There is. A
but
lot
also,
that
I could frame Bruno because he seems like an idiot so far.
Which is interesting because. One of the things that is kind of strange is that it seemed like a very sophisticated crime.
For such an unsophisticated person. Like, everything that's
mm-hmm.
inside this guy's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ladder's
so,
jacked up. The...
Yeah.
Like, what's... Give me... You know, that's what we needed. I want... Like, even though, you know, it should never be... The story should never be about the person that committed the crime, because then we give them fame.
Mm-hmm.
What's Bruno's backstory? Is he like Jesus Christ? Is he a carpenter? Minus the fact that Jesus wouldn't kill somebody, but whatever.
Whatever I read said that he'd actually been, like, in prison before for robbery.
Oh, of course, choose Bruno! If I'm doing research, and I'm like, who's gonna be my fall guy? Bruno Sammartino. Never mind, that's... What's
Bruno
this?
Richard Hopman.
Richard Hopman. Bruno Sammartino's a wrestler from the early 60s. But yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry, keep
so
going.
He was not a saint.
Yes.
But he had not ever murdered anyone
mm-hmm.
that we know of.
That we know. Good call. All right.
So, you know how I said that only a chisel, the ransom note, and the ladder were found?
Yes. What do you think the chisel was for? To pry open the window?
Well, they said that, like, the ladder had been made with a chisel.
So what?
But, I don't...
What's the chisel have to do with the...
I don't know. It was just... It was
okay, okay. Sorry.
So... That was all that was found.
Yeah.
Because the nursery was wiped down and no fingerprints were found. None. Not even the Lindbergh family or their staff or the babies. No. Like, no fingerprints.
No fingerprints at all.
Mm-mm. Not in the nursery,
so
not in the ladder.
So wait. Oh, man. There's so many. Sorry. Now we're getting crazy. Hold on. Let me try to add something.
So much just happened. Bruno, the fingerprints, the baby. What's next? Find out, because we're coming back next Friday with more Madison Davis. So come back, please. Come back and listen to it, because she is a quality guest who deserves all your listens. So when you come back next Friday, just know we're going to learn more about this story and probably some other things. So come back. Thank you for listening to this episode of Life of a Loser. My name is Andrew Edward, always reminding you, hey, maybe it's not that bad being a loser.